good of each other and in ourselves and be patient. And that's hard. That's really hard for me. Patience. But it's really important that we trust that this will change and that hopefully we will make something better from it.
I can't think of a better way to end this program. I mean, just so beautiful. Thank you for that. I want to thank my incredible guests for joining us, Nicole Gustafson and Katie Lori, student support counselors at Gateway Technical College. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Until next time, bye everybody.
This program originally aired May 9th.
Support for WGTD comes from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, offering a new online sports management master's degree. Learn business skills for today's fast-paced sports environment. Details at uwp.edu.
Support comes from Piasecki Funeral Home, thanking everyone for staying safer at home, along with commending our doctors, nurses, EMTs, and other healthcare professionals, as well as the fire department and all law enforcement for their tireless dedication during this time. Piasecki Funeral Home.
A special notice from WGTD. The United Way of Kenosha County's COVID-19 Response Fund has been established to provide financial resources to Kenosha County 501c3s affected throughout our community. Visit KenoshaCountyUnitedWay.org to donate.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jeff Rasmussen, a retired Racine Unified teacher and administrator who currently serves as president of the Racine Area Retired Educators Association, Steve Brown, a retired professor of education leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Mangi. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. Today, you will hear another in a special series of programs recorded from my home due to and about the COVID-19 crisis and how it is affecting educational programs in Southeast Wisconsin. Today, we have two very special guests from Racine Unified School District to tell us what it's been like to navigate the COVID-19 stay-at-home declaration in the school systems. The first guest is Dr. Eric Gallion. He began his tenure as RUSD superintendent on July 1st, 2018. He brings a lot of experience to the post and had been previously the deputy superintendent of RUSD. He began his career in Milwaukee Public Schools as an educational assistant, became a teacher in both middle and high schools, and then he demonstrated strong leadership as a principal at the elementary, middle, and high school levels, and is an administrator who stands firmly in the philosophy of students first. Dr. Gallion earned his doctorate in educational leadership and policy analysis from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He holds two Master of Arts degrees from El Verno College in curriculum development and educational leadership. He earned his undergraduate degree at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee in history education. And he also served in the United States Marine Corps, seeing combat in Operation Desert Storm. Dr. Gallion considers himself a servant leader. We want to welcome you to Education Matters today, Dr. Gallion.
Thank you.
And then we also have Shannon Gordon. She is the Chief Operations Officer for Racine Unified School District, a job which I'm sure has been a challenge during this COVID-19 crisis. She leads the operations office in providing high quality services and support so students and staff members have the maximum opportunity to reach their highest potential. She is responsible for implementation of the district's long range facility master plan, emergency operations, risk management, and school safety. Prior to joining RUSD, she served as the Senior Director of Financial Planning and Budget Services for Milwaukee Public Schools, during which she implemented and evaluated a $1.1 billion annual budget and long-range operation and financial plan. So she also has worked as the director of, is it Fritschke Humboldt Park Community Learning Center, coordinating a wide range of youth and adult programs. She's also worked at the federal level at the U.S. Department of Education and Labor, and at the state level in the Ohio Lieutenant Governor's Office. My goodness, I don't think I've had two guests with this wealth of experience before. So welcome, Shannon.
Thank you.
So we are ready to talk about this, but I always start these programs by saying how nice it is to see you in your homes. Every time I make a call these days, I start by asking how everyone is, who they're sheltering with, as well as the work situation for their household. So do you mind telling us, Dr. Galyon, what's your sheltering situation? Are you mostly at home? Do you get to go into your office? Do you have lots of people with you?
I try to model staying out of the office because I want the rest of the staff to stay out. So I don't go into the office unless I have to. Mm-hmm. So I have a home office and I work from home.
Great.
And I'm single, so I don't have any family here.
And I'll bet a lot of people are envious of you these days. Even though maybe it's a little lonely sometimes, sometimes we get a little too much togetherness if you have a lot of people in your home. So Shannon Gordon, can you tell us a little bit about your situation right now?
Sure. I am my kid's mom, so I have 19-year-old twin boys who are out of school and working. And so we also have my nephew at home who just graduated from high school and is leaving for basic training in about 5 days. And so we've all been socially distancing at home to keep everybody safe. Safe at their workplace. My husband as well has been working from home. I've been fortunate enough to be able to come to work to kind of lead the cleaning work that we're doing in our schools to be able to welcome folks back in the fall.
Great. So just so the listeners are aware, I'm sheltering at home with my husband, 15-year-old son, and two cats, one of which is really, really trying to be part of this program. So if you hear scratching or knocking things off of desks or other noises, you can attribute it to Peggy the cat. All right, so let's get into the details here. I want to know a little bit about how this has gone for RUSD. Dr. Galyon, can you tell us about when you first heard about the COVID-19 virus and when you thought it might have an effect on school operations?
We have been monitoring it for a while, and then when the stay-at-home order went into effect, me and the team got together and immediately made sure we addressed our number one concern, which was safety of the students and staff, making sure that they were safe. And then our next order of business was to make sure all of our students got fed. And so we spent the first couple of weeks focusing on those things. Simultaneously, we launched some enrichment work to get us through the first phase of it. And so at the end of the day, my immediate response was safety first and basic needs second. Mm-hmm.
Ms. Gordon, as Chief Operations Officer, I'm sure you had to think about planning for the virus as well. Do you have any idea that things would move so rapidly? Was there any time to actually do planning?
So I think we were fortunate that dating back to H1N1 flu a number of years ago, the district had developed a comprehensive pandemic plan. And so as we started to get more information about COVID-19, we brought together our safety team to begin to look at that pandemic plan and what needed to be updated. And so we've been fortunate to be able to really follow the script, if you will, in terms of our response, and then utilize our time to collaborate on distance learning and some of the other elements that have not been present for us in the past.
Mm-hmm. So what was the sort of those very early days? You said, Dr. Gallien, you were most concerned with safety and basic needs, getting a little bit of work out to the students. Do you have enough electronic devices? Were you able to share some of those with your students, or how did that work? I know that some districts tried to do that.
Yeah, unfortunately, we do not have enough devices. We're not a one-to-one district yet, but this opened our eyes to what the needs were. We had to adjust to the disparities that was happening across the district, as we had some families who had devices and some families who do not. And we were trying to address that, and our approach was to mitigate it through making sure every kid had access to the handouts and packets that we were delivering.
Great. Let me just reintroduce right now, you are listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert. This is Education Matters. This discussion of Racine Unified School District's response to COVID-19 is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So something that happened in the middle of all this was an election, and RUSD had a referendum on the ballot. So it doesn't matter who, either one of you, tell us a little bit about the referendum and the goals that you have for the funds. I know there was a little drama around the referendum as well. I don't know how much you want to get into that, but what were the goals of the referendum, and how do you see maybe some of these things helping if there's further closures?
So I think that for the last 18 months prior to the election, the district had been going through a comprehensive process to assess the condition of our facilities, to better understand their educational adequacy, or how well the bricks and mortar supports the way we instruct and kids learn best today, as well as to look at our community and how it's changing and where families live. In the impact of busing, and we have schools in the right locations with the right amenities. And so it became a community conversation really around equity and how do we bring up our facilities so that they're the best places for our kids to learn and be successful. And so through that comprehensive process, we came to realize very quickly that the average age of our facilities is over 79 years old. We're teaching students in classrooms that were originally built when President Lincoln was serving as our commander in chief. And so buildings that old prevent some pretty pictures on the outside, but aren't necessarily flexible to the way our students and teachers break up into small groups and set up stations and provide for hands-on learning. And so we first developed the plan and brought that to our community over a couple of months. And then from there, set out with our chief financial officer, Mark Duff, to develop a comprehensive financial plan to support implementation of the facility plan. And so as part of that work, we needed to go out to our community and ask for support for funding. We were fortunate that we were able to develop a financial plan that would allow us to maintain our tax rate over a period of 30 years by utilizing the ability to continue to collect revenue from old referendum and old debt that was coming off, and thought it was the perfect time to go out into our community and seek that funding and support so that we could ensure that all kids, regardless of which school they attended, have a great learning experience, and that our staff have a great place to come to work and teach in every day. And so we did that. That election in very trying times with COVID-19 and all of the challenges it presented across our community, allowed us to prevail by 5 votes. As part of that democratic process, there's the ability for voters to challenge those results, and they did so. And we facilitated a comprehensive 6-day recount of those results, utilizing Election Day poll workers and then some Racine Unified staff, overseen by the Wisconsin Election Commission and our local clerks of court, or city, our municipality clerks, supporting us through that. Those results netted that same 5-vote victory. Further allowed in that process is the ability to challenge in the circuit court system those results and the decisions that were made by the Board of Canvassers. And so currently the referendum sits in the Racine County Circuit Court system, currently being reviewed. And so our next hearing is scheduled for June 22nd.
So you're in a bit of limbo.
We are. I think the ability is, this has been about implementing a comprehensive plan to help our students and staff. And so we're continuing to move forward with what is really that next step of that facility master plan, which is to begin to gather community input. And so where we would have scheduled a series of face-to-face focus groups and meetings with our community members and staff and students across the district, we're now developing those plans to be able to do that work virtually, and hope to begin that yet this summer. And that work will really be about establishing a standard of care so that as we begin construction or renovation projects, we ensure that an art classroom at Case High School is similar to an art classroom at Park High School, that an elementary science classroom looks the same, regardless of which school you're at. And we think it's really important that we're offering more opportunities for our kids to do hands-on learning, to be able to have collaborative time and space, to be able to do the work. And certainly as COVID-19 has hit, what the impact of social distancing and our new social norms at schools will look like will be taken into account.
Right. You know, I think anyone who's spent any time in Racine has seen some of these beautiful, truly beautiful old buildings. But then you have to stop and think, well, when they built them, they weren't wheelchair accessible. They weren't serving meals. Didn't even have electricity. You know, there's so much.
Or bathrooms.
Or bathrooms. Right. Good point. I wasn't even thinking of that. So, you know, so on some level, the fact that you're still utilizing buildings that are well over 100 years old is really a testament to the district's efficiency. Like a lot of places would have just knocked those down. And you've somehow managed to sort of make them work, but they need to be made to work better. Is that what the intention of the referendum is?
I think so. And I think it's a great opportunity for us as well to right size our district. We've had a period of enrollment decline. Mm-hmm. Our families have shifted where they're living in our community. And so to be able to reduce bus drives and get kids to school closer to home, I think it affords us an excellent opportunity to become more effective and efficient in our operations. And at the same time, again, just provide kids and teachers a great place to work and to learn. So, and comparable with what they would get anywhere outside of our district.
Right.
We've seen referendum pass in the communities surrounding us. And we think it's really critical that we afford our kids that same access to great learning environments.
So we talked a little bit at the beginning, Dr. Galleon, about the electronic devices and internet access during this time when people are trying to learn at home. So is there anything in the works to try to make that more accessible, more available to families? Is that part of the plan for facilities?
That is actually a part of the overall referendum. Mm-hmm. A certain portion of the referendum is set aside to upgrade technology and to provide more new technology to our students. And so what this has allowed us to do is, once the referendum is freed up, we will shift and begin to buy more devices at a more rapid pace.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And we're also working in partnership with the county and the Gateway Technical College so that we could provide some hotspots throughout the county.
Right. That is one of the things that makes it difficult too, because if your only device is a phone and you're relying on data as opposed to Wi-Fi, you can run through that very quickly if there are five people in your family who are trying to do online lessons or work or whatever it might be. So that whole idea of adding hotspots that allow students to access Wi-Fi is a really important part of it, in addition to the devices themselves. So one of the things that probably has been exposed is there are a lot of families that do have devices and Wi-Fi in your district, even though there are many who don't. So what do you see, what is this experience going to tell you? How are you going to assess these children when they return or whatever form school takes in the fall? And how are you going to be able to address maybe the gap that occurred over these couple of months? There's always a gap in the summer, but now we have really like a 5-month gap possibly.
Well, first, our number one approach is going to be to have remote learning available over summer school.
Oh, good.
So that would be our approach. Right now, we're working with our staff to get trained up on Google Classroom so that they can interact with their students who do have devices right now. And the goal is to continue to push out enrichment materials throughout the summer so that students can continue to work on their basic skills.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of good materials online too, if they have access. That's always the tricky part. There are math games and there are excellent videos and things like that. There's some bad videos too though, so it's sort of a thing they have to learn how to deal with. What are you doing about special education? I keep thinking about the special ed families during all of this, people whose children, have a range of needs that used to be met by a range of people, their classroom teachers, perhaps an aide, the special ed teachers, the counselors, all kinds of people were servicing them. How are you able to work with your special needs students during this time?
Our special education students are receiving academic enrichment from their regular ed teachers. They're also getting support from their special ed caseworkers who are checking in with them weekly or more as needed. And then the special ed teachers in the district are providing supplemental services and supplemental materials to those students.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard from any of these families about some of the challenges that they're facing, especially maybe for some of the lower functioning students that, it's a lot of work to help those kids just get through a day sometimes?
Yeah, we haven't heard directly from them.
Mm-hmm.
At this point.
Right. So I suppose the caseworkers are the ones who know these stories from the families and are doing what they can. So tell me what have been some of the most difficult challenges that you've faced so far in having students away and staff away from school?
Well, first of all, we miss staff and students and we wish they could be with us. But more importantly, the gap in electronic devices available to families and the disparities that come along with that. What that has also done for us is given us an opportunity to really ramp up, because it ramped up our virtual learning and our remote learning platform and move at a more rapid pace. We have been taking our time rolling that out slowly but surely, but now we have ramped up our training for the staff. We're going to be ramping up training for the students. We're going to be developing a platform where students and families can go on and access materials that way. And so this has been a challenge for us, but it's also become an opportunity.
And I would agree on my end. We've completed more. We've been able to get our trades, our electricians, our plumbers, our painters, our HVAC into our buildings. We've completed more than 1,600 work orders that might have otherwise had to wait till summer or be delayed further. We're able to start our summer cleaning earlier so that we're able to do more detail work and make some of those minor repairs that will allow us to do business differently. The district will be installing over 3,000 hand sanitizer pumps, one in every classroom and in all common spaces. So we've begun that work as well as we prepare to return in the fall.
Wow, that's a lot of hand sanitizer. Let me take a break again and just say that you're listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert. This is Education Matters. This discussion of Racine Unified School District's response to COVID-19 is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So one of the things that is now sort of happening, and I don't know what the decision is for your district, but kids who are seniors in high school, all of the fun stuff happens in March, April, May, and then of course graduation in June. So what have you been doing to help ease the disappointment of seniors and their families just about regular activities they're missing, their sports seasons, concerts, plays, etc. And then do you have plans for graduation and proms and things like that? I don't know what our USD has decided.
No, right now we are in the process of finalizing our plans for the graduation ceremony. Mm-hmm. And the Rotary in Racine hosts the prom, and they're in the process of making some decisions right now. But what we have been doing to ease the anxiety of students is our staff has been reaching out to them, doing office hours, checking in with them. Some of our staff have gotten really creative and created videos and social media profiles for students to just to lift them up. And then as we finalize our plans, we've been working with students, getting feedback from them, and we're in the process of finalizing everything. But it won't be a traditional graduation for sure.
It'll be, everything is different, right? I try to tell my students that they're living through history and they should think of it that way, that they're having this special time and they'll be able to tell people the rest of their lives about what their senior year was like. So you're not, there's going to be something, but it's not going to be like a regular graduation. That would be impossible, really. I mean, you can't, I just think about what a typical high school is like just in the hallways. And these are the older kids who understand the whole concept of a virus. But if you just sort of say, okay, teenagers congregate, well, they're not going to keep 6 feet apart, even if they know they should. So I think it's going to be rough, but again, historic. So everything that's just normal operations have to continue under these circumstances. So you have to hold school board meetings, right? That's required by law. So how do you do that?
We do it through virtual, and we record it, and it's available to the public as they can listen in and send questions or whatever the case may be.
Were you recording meetings before this happened, and they were just recorded at school board headquarters, or?
Yeah, they were recording a video.
And this way they're just recorded on computer video instead, a little bit like we're doing right now.
Yes, it's an audio. It's an audio.
Audio only. Do you think there are more people accessing the meetings than there used to be? There are.
I think so. I think there are more people who are logging on to watch the proceedings than ever did in person, at least in my 2 years with our USD. We know that we have a number of folks who watch the video after it's posted in board docs. But I do think it has allowed our community to participate in a way that feels more accessible to them than maybe it has been in the past.
It's interesting because now, you know, most people have had to make Skype or a Zoom call at some point during these last couple of months. So maybe in the past, there was a link on your site and people could access it, but now they're like, oh, they're talking about the referendum. I can listen in. I know how this works. So I guess you could call that a win, I suppose. When and if you need to go online again, I think you have more people who know how to do it. The students might have known before, but maybe not the families. So when the referendum recount was happening, was that online also?
And so in order for us to facilitate that process safely, we worked collaboratively with the City of Racine Health Department, who had a number of parameters. The Governor's Safer at Home order was still in effect. And so we established a safe place for the process to take place. And then to ensure that folks who wanted to observe the process safely, but from a distance, we also Facebook Lived all of the deliberations and the events over the course of the 6 days.
Wow. So probably a lot more people saw that than would have if it was happening under normal circumstances as well.
I think so. It's a very slow and tedious process. So I can imagine it would be much more enjoyable to watch it from home than in person.
That's right. So are you, I assume you're still planning and hiring for fall. Are you doing all of those operations online too, Dr. Galyon? Are you doing interviews online for principals and teachers and things like that?
Yes, well, we're holding interviews via Zoom or Google Hangout or whatever. So we still are posting positions and it. We have digital platforms where we can rate the candidate and then select them and then from there hold interviews. So we've had that in place for a while. And so that's the biggest change.
Right, just that final interview isn't happening in the school where they might work, I suppose.
Right.
I assume like all the professional development is happening online, or are teachers just so busy trying to do the online teaching and make videos and things like that, they don't have time for professional development?
No, they're required to do about 40 hours of professional learning, and that includes the Google Classroom.
Right. So they'll be ready for now and possibly in the future.
Yes.
So I have been to your incredible professional learning center, and I'm very sad for you all that it's probably not getting the kind of use that you would normally have, right? You probably have teachers there all the time, and now it's just a skeleton staff, I guess.
So I think the benefit of being shut down is we were able to open up that particular space at our Community Pathways campus for first responders who needed space to safely do professional development in response to COVID-19. And so it actually has had a fair amount of use. being able to safely separate groups of first responders for professional development and training that they've needed in our county to better respond to the pandemic.
Wow, that's really great. What a thoughtful way to use that great facility. Did someone approach you, or was that your idea to just offer?
So we're fortunate that our USD was given a seat on the Emergency Operations Center team here in Racine County. So I serve as the K-12 representative to that group. And so since before we closed, we've been meeting with the Emergency Operations Center on a daily basis, originally 7 days a week. I'm happy to say we're down to five now. And it's afforded us an opportunity both to collaborate and learn more about improving our emergency operations, but we've been able then to be a support and a resource for some of those other community responders, whether it was through the generous donations of our teachers and staff, being able to utilize hand sanitizer and disinfecting wipes that we were using in our classroom that we no longer needed for the school year, and get those into the hands of police departments and fire departments, to building hand sanitizing stations that many of our communities utilized on election day. So we've worked really hard, I think, to be a critical partner in responding both to support our district needs as well as the needs throughout the county.
That's pretty great. Let me do a quick reintroduction. You are listening to WGTD HDFM. This is Education Matters. We are discussing Racine Unified School District's response to COVID-19, and you can listen again at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page, or you can join us on Facebook at WGTD Education Matters and join in a discussion there. So people are sort of saying that this is one of those culture changing events where things may look very different, like the school 5 years ago and school 5 years from now are gonna be very different, and the catalyst was this COVID crisis. So do either of you have any ideas about how you think schools are going to change, and maybe how the referendum funds, if you get them, will contribute to that because of this? Like, things we've learned about how to do things better, or challenges that we faced?
I think for certain that we will now become a blended learning environment, where we're using technology as well as face-to-face teaching. Of course, that we may have to relook at our facilities maintenance plan to see if it fits the current needs of the district. And quite honestly, it's gonna require every teacher and student to be trained up on some virtual planning, virtual learning environments. Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also gonna have us addressing our safety culture, everything from how often are we setting aside time for students and staff to wash their hands, having hand sanitizer available in every room, we've just gone through a period where we've been putting desks closer together, right? And setting up small learning stations and things like that. And now this guidance has us breaking all of that apart and putting desks 6 feet apart. And so I think as we learn how to do this safely, it'll be an evolving process that changes until we get a vaccine. And you know, I would hope in 18 months we look back at this and we're talking about it just like we talk about the flu.
Right.
It's something we know that's out there. We know how to deal with it. When we're in flu season, we ramp up certain efforts and activities to mitigate the risk. And so I think we're also very collaborative with our teachers and our administrators and our staff to make sure that we're not overreacting and sort of swinging that pendulum to a place that we don't think will support, right? We wouldn't make short-term modifications and invest a lot of money in building redesign just for this specific purpose. It's really about how do we address these safety concerns as well as the overarching academic and educational needs about how our teachers teach and our kids learn best today.
Mm-hmm. Who knows, maybe there'll be less absenteeism after this because we'll all know better how to sanitize and wash our hands frequently. I know everybody teaches that when kids are in kindergarten and first grade, or every time they switch school buildings, you kind of go over all those things, but you know, it sort of drops off and then we all get the cold and flu from each other. So maybe we'll end up having that as a benefit. So I'm pretty sure that everyone that's still listening with to us wants to know if you have plans for opening schools in the fall. So do you know what those plans are? Do you have any plans? You said you're going to do some summer school to help students be prepared for the next grade level. There's probably going to be some extra assessment right at the beginning to sort of figure out what they've retained from the previous year. Do you have a vision for fall, or are we still in murky territory?
We do have a team of staff that are working on our plan that makes sure we address the physical, the social, emotional, and the academic well-being of all of our kids. And it's like a three, not a three phase, but a three option approach. You know, what does it look like if option one took place that place? And so we're in the process of building that. And because it has so many moving parts, it's going to require us to really work collaboratively across the district with the various departments and making sure we're seeking input and thinking about all the variables. So that's what we're working on now. So we do have a plan.
Yes, it is sort of like a choose your own adventure book, right? We don't really know what's going to happen, so you have to be sort of ready for everything. Can we just reiterate for the audience, how many students, staff, and how many buildings are we talking about in your school district?
So the district has about 35 buildings, 29 schools. We have approximately 18,000 students and about 3,000 staff, about 1,600 teachers. And so I think what we're helping, and our, quite frankly, our staff are helping us process through, is really the need for grace, for flexibility. As things change rapidly, we're in a county where our COVID cases are growing exponentially. They're not getting smaller. And so we don't feel like we've gotten through the worst of it yet. But I think we're working collaboratively to both listen and plan for all scenarios and to put in place the operational and structural things that are necessary to be successful, regardless of which of those options that we have to execute, because it could look like we're executing all three options at different points in time of the year. And so I think, again, our goal is to be as prepared as possible to communicate out as we get closer to finalizing those plans so that we can help educate our students, our staff, and families on the plans. But at the end of the day, and Dr. Gallien really started with this, our goal is to keep students and staff safe.
Mm-hmm. That's what we're all hoping for. So I always like to end interviews on an optimistic note. Is there anything unexpectedly positive that you think has emerged from this crisis for your school district, for your teachers, for yourself? Dr. Gallien?
Yes, I think this situation has highlighted all the special work that our staff do. And, you know, they do a lot of it and have been doing a lot of before COVID, but it really highlighted how much they're in tune to their students and how much love they have for their students. And so it really makes you proud of the commitment to our students and families that our staff has. And also, I think another thing is that I think we have an amazing staff that works at in our buildings.